Morning. So last night I asked each of you to choose one or more of the four pillars of Zen meditation practice. And I don't want to talk much more about those today, but just a little bit. Dogen himself talks mostly about Shikantaza, the third pillar. But then he's always throwing things in to mess up your mind, which he asks you to investigate. investigate. That would be the fourth pillar. That would be the questioning. The first pillar, just coming back to your body, he actually doesn't talk about that at all. I remember when Suzuki Roshi first gave me Zazen instruction, he told me to follow my breathing. He said, but Dogen doesn't say that. But he said, but you need that, Tim. Well, I guess I needed it. We need these practices sometimes. So we shouldn't just pay attention to what some hero did. We need to become our own hero. And find a practice that helps us come back to this incredible silence. This incredible silence. So, in the Nikayas, those are the original Pali texts where Buddha talks. Before the Mahayanas got in and messed with stuff. in the Nikayas, Buddha talks about all four of these, though he doesn't call them pillars. And here's one where he talks about the first and the second, using the first and the second together. Breathing in long, one discerns, I'm breathing in long. Or breathing out long, one discerns, I'm breathing out long. Or breathing in short, one discerns, I'm breathing in short. Or breathing out short, one discerns, I'm breathing out short. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, sensitive to the entire body. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, calming the bodily fabrication. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, sensitive to refreshment. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, sensitive to ease. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, sensitive to mental fabrication. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, calming mental fabrication. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, sensitive to the mind. One trains oneself, I'll breathe in and out, gladdening the mind. See, the positive mental dharma is just kind of included in there. Just kind of included because we need to encourage ourselves. Because we get discouraged so easily. So easily. We need to have these encouraging words to continue in this practice. Moment after moment. It's very important. You don't have to use his words. Just find some encouraging words to encourage you to come back to this incredible silence. This incredible silence. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, steadying the mind. Steadying the mind, okay? One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, releasing the mind. Releasing the mind. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, focusing on inconstancy. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, focusing on dispassion. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, focusing on cessation. One trains oneself. I'll breathe in and out, focusing on relinquishment. So with that prelude, I want to spend today and tomorrow and Monday continuing the talks that I've been giving on the Genjo Koan by Dogen. I've given three talks so far, and I guess I will give 4, 5, 6 talks. How about that? And I still won't be finished with the Genjo Koan. Well, of course, we're never finished with anything, really, are we? Okay, so koan, kungan in Chinese, kungan. Ko or kung means same. An means difference. Sameness, difference. Koan, kungan. Sameness, difference. So all of the kungans are about sameness, difference. Difference, sameness. And if we only know difference, then the peace that we experience is not palpable peace. It's the peace that we experience. Tim experiences, Susan experiences, Bill experiences. That's not the sameness peace. That's the difference piece. But the sameness piece is always here. And it manifests itself in lots of different ways. So sameness, difference. So all of the Chinese koans are about sameness, difference. That's what they're about. Sameness, difference. You could say also they're about death, life. Death is all the same, isn't it? Life is all different. They're all about death, life. Life, death. Sameness, difference. They're all about emptiness, form. Emptiness is all the same. Forms are all different. All different. How wonderful it is for me to sit and look at you. Your postures are all different. Your colors are all different. Expressions are all different. Your grimaces are all different. There's a lot of grimacing going on in retreats, usually. Of course, us teachers don't model being smiley during retreats. You have to go to a Thich Nhat Hanh retreat to have a teacher model being smiley. Because we weren't taught to be smiley. We were taught just to be here and not look around. Take a step backward into the great abyss. Same difference. Different sameness. So, koan. Kungan. So, genjo kungan. Genjo koan. Genjo means three different meanings. From Shahako Okamura. Thank you, Shahako Okamura, for helping me with these series of talks on the Genjo Koan. Thank you, Francis Cook, for helping me with these talks on the Genjo Koan. Who else? Cook? Oh, thank you, Kaz Tanahashi, for helping me on these talks on the Genjo Koan. Three teachers who have helped a lot, are helping a lot. I don't know what happened to Francis Cook, but I know Shohaku Okamura and Kaz Tanahashi are still around. So Genjo. Genjo means revealed. Revealed. Oh, so, and so sameness difference revealed. Revealed. Sameness difference is translated sometimes as fundamental point. Fundamental point by Ta-Nehisi. The fundamental point of life is revealed. Of death is revealed. Life, death is revealed. The fundamental point of reality, that's another translation of koan, is revealed. Through our practice, through what we're doing right now, it's revealed. It's also shown, well, maybe revealed is inadequate because it makes us think that it's not here already. We have to get rid of a lot of stuff first, but it's here already, so it's shown. It's just shown. We don't have to go deep. We just have to take one little step backward, one little step inward. Don't have to go away far away, and we see it. It shows. It shows itself. It's always showing itself. Of course, for me to say we see it is not accurate. How could that be accurate? The seeing is the seeing. It's the seeing. If I say I see it, it's already dead, right? And the third meaning that especially Shohaku Okamura likes to use is revealed. So, reality revealed. The fundamental point revealed. No, excuse me. I did that one already. That's the first. First one is revealed. Second one is shown. The third one is actualized. So revealed as if something were hidden. That's the little less adequate. Shown is good, but actualized is even better for Dogen because it's bringing it alive. Bringing it alive in this moment. Sameness, difference. Life, death. Emptiness, form. Without this contradiction that we carry that messes us up, going to one thing, wishing we were someplace else, pretending we're okay, feeling okay now, but worrying about after the talk's over. All of these contradictions we live within. The resolution of those is Genjo Koan, actualizing the fundamental point. Actualizing sameness, difference, life, death, just as we are. Nothing special. So now I'm going to read from a little bit of the Genjo Koan. The last time I talked about Genjo Koan, I talked about the section on to study Buddhism is to study the self. Now I'm going a couple, two or three sections farther, and I'm talking about the section on realization. And today I'm just going to talk about the first sentence, and tomorrow I'm going to continue talking about the first sentence. Seems like there's a lot to say. Anyway, the first sentence is, when a person attains realization, it is like the moon reflecting on the water. The moon never becomes wet, the water is never destroyed. Although it is vast and great light, it reflects itself on a small amount of water. The whole moon and even the whole sky reflects on even a drop of dew, on a blade of grass, or a single tiny drop of water. So when a person attains realization, when a person attains satori is actually the Japanese word, satori, realization, enlightenment, it is like the moon reflecting on the water. So four different meanings of this that relate to practice and are meant to help us and encourage us in our practice. The first one is pretty simple, pretty matter of fact. It's realization of non-being, realization that of the silence that's palpable, that's beyond storyline, that's beyond any idea of before and after, any idea of attainment or discouragement or happiness or sadness, or and that attainment is talked about a lot in Chinese Zen and in Rinzai Zen, a lot. The Chinese Zen stories almost always end with what? Then he had an awakening. Then she had an awakening. Well, not many she's, but once in a while, then she had an awakening. Then everything dropped away, and he knew. And you read Chinese story after Chinese story. It seems to be focusing on that. And it comes from the Indian, too. The Indian, Vimalakirti. Vimalakirti, Vimalakirti Nirdesa Sutra. We've never studied Vimalakirti Nirdesa Sutra. A couple of you told me you hate it, so that's why we didn't study it. But I think we should study it sometime. It's good sometimes to study something you hate. Because you learn a lot about yourself, I think, when you do that. A lot about yourself. So Vimalakirti is what? He's a rich guy. He's a rich bodhisattva. And he has retinues and lots of wealth. But he dwells in non-being. And so Buddha, Vimalakirti's sick, and Buddha sends people to inquire after Vimalakirti's health, but no one wants to go because they're afraid of Vimalakirti's thunderous silence. That's too bad to be afraid of thunderous silence, isn't it? But silence is scary when we're not used to it. When we're not used to real stillness, it's scary because it interferes with our radio program. Well, some space is okay, but total silence? Scary, so nobody wanted to come to Vimalakirti. Remember this? Nobody wanted to see him because that thunderous silence scared them. And in retreats, sometimes people get scared. Usually not the first morning. But after a while, people get scared by all the silence. I just need to talk to someone. I just need to do something. Well, that's a good sign. That means it's really beginning to penetrate. That's a good sign. So then only Manjushri, only the bodhisattva of wisdom would go to see him. Manjushri, he's kind of hot on himself as being wise. I'll go. So then, of course, Manjushri says this all. It goes on and on about how Manjushri deals with him and how Vimalakirti just mostly maintains silence, but then Manjushri finally gets him to talk, and then he talks a whole sutra worth in his thunderous silence. So then one of Buddha's disciples, Upali, one of Buddha's ten most famous disciples, comes to see him. And after Manjushri, that the others feel like, well, they can try it too. So here's a quote where Reverend Upali has approached him, and he's telling Reverend Upali about the Dharma. He says, Reverend Upali, Reverend, I don't know, Reverend may not be a good translation. This is Shohaku's translation, and I have to just take it. Reverend Upali, all things are without production, destruction, and duration. Like magical illusions, clouds, and lightning, all things are evanescent, not remaining even for an instant. All things are like dreams, hallucinations, and unreal vision. All things are like the reflection of the moon in the water, and like a mirror image, they are born of mental construction. They are born of mental construction. So in this case, the moon and the water relates to how we get caught by our fantasy life, how we get caught by our mental constructions. And since Vimalakirti is not caught by his mental constructions, he can live in the world and still just be where he is without worrying about rich or poor. But still, he's very compassionate. He doesn't worry about it, but he feels compassion. And the whole sutra talks about his compassion. So severing the cord of storyline is partly what Zen practice is about, severing that cord, that umbilical cord. We have one cord that gets severed at birth, one umbilical cord, and then we develop a new cord. That new cord acculturates us, it keeps us going, it gives us a place in the world, it helps us relate to others. But in Zen practice, we, at some point, will sever that cord. At some point, that cord will just dry up. And then we can still use it, but it no longer is the driving force behind our lives. Because instead, we are immersed in silence. We're just immersed in it. But we don't have any special idea about silence or immersion or anything. We're just who we are, just what we are. Just blinking our eyes sometimes, getting confused sometimes. Being what we are, being who we are. Which is not the storyline, but it includes the storyline. But it's not the storyline when the cord is severed. You see something, but you don't see anything because there's no you. But there's you. Sure, why not? You. me. So, when Reb was here, he told a grandchild story, and then people have been encouraging me to tell grandchild stories, so I have a whole bunch of them. I'll just tell one. Because I don't want to. Well, this is really not about grandchildren. So my grandchild, he's 2.5, and his name is Ethan. And when I saw him last time, which was, when was that? In retreats, I forget everything. I saw him, you know, a month or 2 or 3 months ago. I saw him. I know that. And I said, Ethan. Yeah, I kept calling him Ethan. That's his name, Ethan. And he said, baby. You know, I said to Aaron, he said, well, isn't he know his name's Ethan? She said, well, the French, they use the term baby. And his dad calls him baby. So he thinks he's baby. So I, oh, okay, that's cool. So I started saying baby, too. You know, why not? baby. It's fun. And my daughter set up this thing to Skype. I'm not technologically oriented, but some people in my family are, and they set up these two cameras, right? One here and one in Paris, where my grandson lives, so we can Skype, so we can actually see each other and talk, right, in real time. So my grandson comes on the screen. I wave to him, and he waves back. Grandpa? He knows that, Grandpa. And I said, yes, baby. Hi, baby. He said, no, baby. Big boy. Big boy. I said, but when I saw you last, you were baby. You used to be baby. Just 2 weeks ago when I talked to you on the phone, you were baby. Big boy. No baby. No baby. So he has not yet developed the cord. He has not yet developed the cord between past and present. He is big boy now. He was never baby. Because all those big boys in his class, he goes to school. They have school for two and three-year-olds in France, 2 days a week. It's public school. All those kids who were picking on him, they're big boys. So he's big boy. He's not baby. Well, so he is not. He has not developed that linkage yet. And that linkage, he will need to develop that. But then, like all of us, he will become what? He will become mesmerized by it. He will become hypnotized by it. It will be his whole reason for being. Because we humans do this very strange thing. Instead of just learning this, it becomes our whole world. We have nothing but it. And then we miss. We miss this wonderful silence. That's not silence at all. Because it's right in the middle of the storm. Huge storm that's going on. When I look out there at all you this morning, I think, oh, it's so still. But then if I peek a little bit into one of your minds, if I'm psychic, who knows, I might be. But in that storm, it's completely still right there. Because sameness, difference. Difference, sameness. But that's your koan. That's your question. I don't know how this question occurs to you, how it comes up for you. But that question is what Zen practice, what drives Zen practice. It's the hunger to know kungan, to know koan, to know sameness, difference. Stillness right in the middle of some huge storm. That is the way, is central to Zen. Central to Zen. So, Shohaku Okamura talks about a book that his teacher was very fond of by a Zen teacher called Ozawa Roshi, written in Japan, not translated into English. And Ozawa Roshi had his legs blown off in World War II. His legs blown off in World War II. But he still wanted to practice. Even more wanted to practice. Sometimes when something bad happens to you, you really want to practice. Because you don't have much choice. You feel like, geez, things are so hard for you that you think through practice you can return to your ease. And you actually can. You actually can return to your natural ease. But it takes some work. Some work, but not this kind of work where we try to accomplish something. Not that work. Just some work. So, Reverend Ozawa, or Ozawa Roshi, I prefer Ozawa Roshi, because I don't really like to be Reverend Tim, because I have all this baggage about my Christian tradition. That's my problem, right? So, Ozawa Roshi wrote this book, and he used two of the four pillars in his practice. Two of the four pillars. Particularly two of the four pillars. He really had to use the second pillar. He really had to use bringing positive mental dharmas into view. Because, geez, a Zen teacher with no legs? I mean, isn't this sitting like this what it's all about? Isn't this the whole deal? Isn't this the main deal? But what if I have no legs at all? So he really had to work on bringing the positive mental dharmas into view. He really worked on that. He really worked on that because he wanted to teach. He wanted to help people. He wanted to be in the world. He wanted to manifest the stillness that's always here. That we overlook time, moment after moment. But it's always here. Don't worry. You can always come back to it. It ain't going nowhere. It ain't going nowhere. You may be, but it ain't. So, one of the things he worked on was to believe and to say to himself, I am born just now with no legs. I am born just now with no legs. I am born just now with a head, with an arm, with a heart, with a mind, with love, with compassion, with anger. I am born with no legs. And he used that to help his shikantaza. But he couldn't do his shikantaza the way we're supposed to do shikantaza. Isn't there a right way to do shikantaza? Sitting upright? No cushion behind your back like those guys have. No chair, right? Sitting upright. Full lotus, or maybe half lotus. Half lotus is pretty good, right? How can he do it? How can he do it? He really had to encourage himself. He really had to see that he had a full Dharma body with no legs. A full Dharma body. And then he could practice bare attention. Because bare attention is not trying to be mindful. It's not trying to go someplace. It's just this. Just feeling this. Just being this. Just attending to this. That's all it is. But he couldn't do it at all without the encouragement, even for a second, that he was giving to himself and that other people in the community were giving him, because they were moved. They were really moved by his effort. By his effort. So that's one of the things about Dogen is when he talks about things, he talks about them he'll use words in one way, but then if you read about the word, there's a second meaning and there's a third meaning and there's a fourth meaning. And he does that to help you just loosen up a little bit, wake up a little bit, go to sleep from your umbilical cord a little bit, wake up. Completely. So he's always twisting his words around. So there are four different ways in which he's talking about. He says the same thing. He only says it once, but there are four different ways of thinking about it, but there are probably 40 different ways, because he's a master of contradiction and ambiguity in a poetic way, in an aesthetically pleasing poetic way. He gets away with it. He gets away with it, which is why so many people are still reading his stuff, I think, paying attention to his stuff. So the second way, Zen Master Dzogchen from China. The fourth ancestor in the Chinese lineage. After giving instruction for Zazen practice, he says, days and nights, in walking, standing still, sitting and lying down, if you always contemplate in this way, you will know that your own body is like the moon in the water, the reflection in a mirror, the heat waves in a hot day, the echo in the empty sky, in the empty valley. You cannot say it is a being, because even if you try to catch it, you cannot see its substance. Also, you cannot say it is non-being, because it is clearly in front of your eyes. So that's a second meaning of the moon and the water. It's always in front of your eyes. Anytime you see even a little trickle of water, the moon is there. The moon is there. Even if it's agitated water, then the moon's just sparkling. Even more, the more agitation there is, the more sparkle there is in the water. If you see that, and then when you see that, There's great silence right in the middle of that agitation. Great silence. Because it's always here. Because it's always here. Doesn't care about agitation. Doesn't care about it. Doesn't know the difference. Sameness, difference. Difference, sameness. So, as I said, and as you guys know, in the Chinese tradition and in the Rinzai tradition, there's a big emphasis on having this experience of non-being, of severing the umbilical cord and having a huge experience of it where everything falls away. And the main man in Rinzai Zen, Hakuin Zenji, the main man in the modern tradition, really goes back to Hakuin Zenji. If you read Hakuin's biography, you'll read about his great awakenings, his great enlightenment experiences, where he just everything dropped away, all of his anxieties and fears, and he laughed great laughter, and then he also cried great tears for all the beings who were stuck, and for he himself in the past had been stuck in this hypnotized umbilical cord state that so many people take with them from the age of whenever Ethan is going to develop his. I'm looking forward to it, but I wish I could encourage him to practice when he's 13 or 12 or 9. But the only way I can encourage him to practice is to be nice to him and not just be nice to him and be with him. Because you can't encourage people to practice. It has to come from them. You just have to be there with them. You just have to be there with them. Like the moon in the water. So anyway, Hakuin, and so Rinzai then puts this huge emphasis on this koan and this kensho and this koan and this kensho and this koan. Woo! Right? Some of you have practiced this, or at least you've read about it. Then Dogen, you know, he talks about his experience of body and mind dropping away. And that seems to be very impactful, but his whole teaching doesn't take that form. It takes a really different form from Hakuin's. Then there are teachers that we really love and respect, that I love and respect, like Shahaku Okamura. He's going to be at Dharma Field in the fall. He comes every year. Is he going to be at Clouds in the fall? I don't know, someplace. He comes every year. when we were having a conversation once, Shahaku said, I never had an experience like this. He never had an experience like this. He's a wonderful teacher. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. So he didn't have a spiritual orgasm. Spiritual orgasm. But take that for what it's worth. So having a great experience is good. But does someone who has great orgasms, is that person necessarily a better lover? Are the best lovers the most affectionate, the most kind, the most attentive to their loved one? Someone who has great orgasms? Is that not necessarily true, is it? Maybe not. Maybe actually their orgasm makes them a worse lover. Because, woo-hoo-hoo! Excuse me. Excuse me. It's so much woo-hoo-hoo that where is the connection? So, this is good, but in our Zen, in Soto Zen, this is not the most important thing. That's why we say neither non-being nor being. Don't get attached to this non-being. Don't